Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Football Fanalytics podcast in association with 23. This is the show that explores the ever-growing world of football analytics and takes on the many tactical and topical discussions within the game. It's episode 68 and we're talking all things refs this week. My name is Mark Carey and joining me as always is Ryan Bailey. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm good. Ryan Bailey, sadly, previously Globe Soccer Award nominee Ryan Bailey and Mark Carey sadly didn't win an award, did we? Not on our way to Dubai.
We're still nominees though, as in you said that as though it was past tense. We, as in, well, it no longer exists. We are and we will always will be nominees of the Globe Soccer Awards for best journalist. How mad.
So even if you don't get into the second round, do you still class yourself as a nominee?
Well, I mean, I've already thought about my acceptance speech. Unfortunately, don't need to use it now. But, you know, phrases like, it's just an honour to be nominated, come into play. Do you know what I mean? So, you gotta it's still important. It's still very... It was such a compliment for us to be. And so weird that we were as part of that.
Very strange.
That whole nomination. But no, sadly, we didn't win or even get to the next stage of the best journalist category for the Globe Soccer Awards. So we won't be going to Dubai this year, at least. Still hold hope for future years.
Not this year. Fabrizio Romano, you know, with his billions of followers and whatever, will probably win. And that's fine. Fabrizio, you do you. If you want the Globe Soccer Awards, you have it. We're not that bothered, clearly.
Yeah.
There is always Dubai 2023, or maybe it'll be somewhere, you know, better than Dubai, and we'll get on the plane then. But thanks for all who voted for us anyway.
yeah. The dream lives on next year. Who knows? But no, that was an exciting thing that's happened since our last full episode, actually. So it's been a little while. And we've got some other exciting news as well, haven't we, in terms of we're going up in the world as a podcast.
We are going up in the world, Mark. We have been approached by the Sports Social Podcast Network, which, from my understanding, is basically a network with lots of fantastic pods, both big, small, amateur, professional, etc., etc. And it's this massive network of wonderful things. And the Football Fanalytics podcast, as of next time we record an episode, we'll be part of the Sports Social Podcast Network, which is exciting. And I think that's what makes us sound a bit sort of official, doesn't it, Mark? Do you know what I mean? We're part of a network. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's really nice to be under their umbrella, I guess. And I think it's going to be beneficial for both of us. But I think for us especially, the really nice thing is that the plan is for us to reach more listeners, which is can only be a good thing, obviously. And I think, as we've spoken about many times, the good thing about our podcast is that you can listen at any point or join at any point, go back through the archives, and almost every one of our episodes is an time dependent. It's, you know, evergreen, yeah. isn't it? So you're sort of explaining certain concepts, certain things within analytics. So hopefully off the back of it, we'll get more listeners and they'll go straight back to episode one.
There you go. And also another weird thing is we're going to have adverts in our episodes, which is a bit, that again, will make us sound pretty professional, I think. But I guess we've just got to say thank you to everyone who has listened to us up to this point, and just skip the adverts. That's fine. You know, you don't need to listen to those. Just get to the good stuff anyway. But
do
you know,
do what you want.
Just do what you want,
basically.
As long
as you're listening to our dulcet tones.
Exactly. Yeah, but look, the Football Fantasies podcast, as you say, Mark, is going up in the world. Yeah, remember to keep sharing, keep telling your friends about it, subscribe, etc., etc. And yeah, just again, it all points to Dubai 2023. Mm-hmm. We will get there.
Yeah, maybe next year. Right, let's get into the crux of the episode, I think. It's one of those as well, which we always seem to do, just when we think that we've run out of ideas, we've pulled something out of nowhere. And this is going to be a fun one. We've got different things that we're covering, all about referees. So should we get into it?
Let's do it.
So, referees, let's get into it. We sort of love to hate them, I think, is a general term, referees. They're there to adjudicate the game, Ryan. Some people think they're there to spoil it a little bit. They basically take up most of the post-match press conference in terms of the topic. It's always about the referee decision. In a lot of this, actually, we're not even going to talk too much about VAR, but we absolutely can do if you wish to. But what sort of comes to mind for you when we think about referees? Good, bad, in between?
Well, it's funny actually that you sort of say, you know, they're basically an admin role, aren't they, refs? They're there to adjudicate the game, as you say, and put in good admin for the game and keep it running, keep it fair, keep it smooth. And you're so right, at the end of every single press conference, if there's not a question about a refereeing decision or a sort of a lack of decision in lots of examples, you know, it always seems to take over everything, doesn't it? And I'm always one of those people who I'd like to think that I was sort of supportive of referees because, well, I think everyone thinks that, don't they, until there's a scenario. But I think something that genuinely, on a serious point, winds me up is when I see someone like Jurgen Klopp, who I know is hard to say anything negative about him to a Liverpool fan, but I think the one thing that really bogs me about Jurgen Klopp is how he sort of is the most likeable character in lots of ways, but then the way he sort of treats referees and those sort of images which are quite funny, and he's not the only one, obviously, but those images that are quite funny where he's kind of like screaming in a referee's face, I actually think he's pretty aggressive and out of order half time. I don't really understand aggression towards referees because at the end of the day, who would want to be a referee with some of the treatment that they get? And that there's obviously lots of nuances to it. There are lots of refereeing mistakes. There are lots of controversial things to do with the subject. But at the end of the day, I think the sort of the abuse and the negativity towards referees completely outweighs the good stuff all the time, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree. I think it's really unfair if any manager were to shout or berate a referee. Sometimes, obviously, the emotions of the game take over, but you can still be respectful and channel that in the right way. And I think, yeah, the example that you gave with Jurgen Klopp is just awful, where he gets really dangerously close to stopping the official from actually carrying on from officiating the game, which isn't obviously a good thing. So I do completely agree there. I have two questions for you. One, what's your thoughts on referees using, or all of the officials using, well, they use microphones already, but the microphones to be heard by the fan on the television, like has been used in Australia. I think I've seen a few clips in the Australian A-League where they use that to great effect, actually. What are your thoughts on doing that sort of within the Premier League or more broadly across Europe?
I think it'd be amazing. And I think it would help a lot of the problems that we all have with referees. And that's not, you know, that's hardly insightful. That's chatted about a lot, isn't it? That when people are waiting, you know, up to sort of 5 minutes for VAR decisions to happen, a lot of the people are saying, well, why can't we hear the process? So at least we understand and we're sort of not in the dark about what's going on. And I totally agree with that. The difficulty is if you're watching it with like your 10-year-old son or something, and you've got the players just in the background absolutely screaming some horrendous things. I imagine you hear some terribly abusive things. That's obviously just the reason why it can't happen, isn't it? But I love it in, you know, I don't watch an awful lot of rugby, but when I do,
yeah,
I think it's brilliant to hear the thought process and the sort of the understanding behind it, and the sort of the respect for the referees is the main thing you get in other sports, isn't
Absolutely.
It? That you don't get in football. But but then again, you know, I think the main thing that it would give is it'd help us understand some of the really questionable decisions, because as much as you want to support referees and stuff, there are some decisions that make you go, how have they ended up getting there? I mean, the at the time of recording, the most recent set of Premier League fixtures, when Man City beat Fulham with the last 93rd minute penalty awarded, I've watched that clip of Kevin De Bruyne going down so many times, and I just can't understand it, how I would give that as a referee, because slow-mo, not slow-mo, any sort of angle, the sort of the theatrical dive from what can only be described as a tiny touch on his foot to award a penalty to the best team in the league against a team who've sort of, you know, fought hard to get a draw. I just can't understand why they'd make that decision. So I'd love to have heard why that penalty was given, for instance. It's one of those, isn't it?
No, completely. I think you make a good point about other sports and rugby. And I think, as you say, it's more the, I guess, the culture of the game, and the players do swear, I think, more in football than in rugby. But I think the annoying thing or the frustrating thing is that rugby shows that it can be done in terms of the actual process. Like, there's no problem with maybe, you know, using an earpiece and having the communication from the referee's side. Like, physically, it can easily be done. But I think it's more just kind of socially, it's a bit of a no-no, as you say, because there'll be so much swearing that you can't actually then feed that through into the broadcast. Which brings me to my second question. What do you think about having the referee or any official come out when necessary after a game and have it a bit more obligatory or a bit more commonly that a referee comes out in a post-match press conference themselves, you know, or even if it's just a short interview to explain why they've made the decisions they have. Again, good, bad, or in between.
I think that's a really good idea. I mean, I'm sure there's probably people who don't think that, and who there's probably reasons that I haven't thought of why it might not be. But on the one hand, I'm like, referees shouldn't have to explain themselves, and referees' decision should be final, and you should go with it regardless. But then I do think it would just help clear up a lot of the chat either side. If they almost gave an explanation, then you accepted it and went, fine, that's the decision, move on. I think half the speculation that you kind of get from pundits and fans and days after a controversial decision would probably be at least, you know, chipped down a little bit, because you'd had at least the referee's voice on it. Whereas for some of the most questionable decisions, we'll never know really why they made that, because you don't get to hear, do you? I think the most frustrating thing for me is, and it's hard as well, I'm not sort of suggesting I could do it any better, but it is the consistency, isn't it, across the board of everything. One thing that is a foul in one game is not a foul in another game. And I think in terms of all the things we talk about with sample size and trying to sort of look at patterns and everything like that within football, it's quite hard, isn't it? Because in one game, the outcome could be totally different with all the variables because of a simple refereeing decision in lots of ways. And I think with the Liverpool Man City game, was it Anthony Taylor sort of, I heard a really good chat about it on Five Live. They sort of were on about, he'd gone over to Klopp and Pep at the start of the game and basically said to them, I'm going to be more lenient this game.
Yeah.
Which is just an absolutely bizarre thing to happen, because it's almost like, it's not a subjective way of refereeing, is it? There should be a foul should be a foul, in the different circumstances. You know, it's not really something you get to choose about how you're going to referee a game, is it? In my head, it's not, but I just think there's so many variables and it's really hard to know what's right and what's wrong all the time, isn't it?
Yeah, no, that is a really good point. I think you're almost allowed to change maybe within a season, certainly not within a game, whether that is among all the referees or with the individual referee, because I think we spoke about it before. At the start of this season, we were told that referees are going to be a little bit more lenient on fouls. Whether or not that actually has kind of come to fruition or will across the course of the season, I don't know, but it's letting the game flow a little bit more is the main idea behind that, which I understand. But then to change that from game to game just makes absolutely no sense, and to say that at the start of a game is a strange one. But as you say, it's a thankless role anyway. And I think obviously the whole game of football is built upon teams and players making mistakes, and that's how goals come about. And when it's when it goes for your team, it's great. If the opposition player makes a bad pass, is sort of has bad positioning, what makes a mistake, whatever, the whole game is built upon trying to minimize your own mistakes and maximize the mistakes or expose the mistakes of the opposition. So it's okay if a player does it to a certain extent, because that's what makes the game, but it's not okay if a referee does it. That, you know, basically I'm saying that everyone's human, and it's when it's just there's so much on the line, isn't it? When you're talking about these big decisions, and the consistency thing is a really important one. I think when you've got VAR to have a bit of a safety net behind, you know, people do make mistakes and people do miss things. That's completely fine. But now that we do have VAR, and I said at the start we weren't going to speak about VAR, but it it does easily come into it, that consistency that you speak of is the interesting thing, where it's like maybe that referee decided, okay, well, I'm not going to give that, but that's where the VAR has to catch it and say, well, no, we have given those sorts of fouls in the previous game week, in the previous game week to that, and whatever it might be. So we have to stay consistent here. You can't just decide on a whim when you've got a couple of minutes to think about it, rather than that split second decision when you've got the, you know, however many officials in Stockley Park or whatever. That's where the consistency is the most frustrating thing.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think the weird thing is as well, I mean, you know, especially with things like handball and stuff like that, I don't even really know what handball is anymore. I had like a I had a bit of a we had a sort of a jokey argument of at Monday Night Football last night, because like the ball hit someone's hand and it was like down by their side, but it was fully sort of dangling and it hit their hand and stopped the ball from going essentially in the sort of top corner of the five-side goal, and it's handball. And he's like, yeah, but I've got my hand down by my side. And I was like, it don't matter, like you it's handball. But he's like, well, what can I do with my hand then? And I was like, well, yeah, good point. But there's so many occasions that I sort of, that whole unnatural position thing for handball seems to change game to game. And similarly, just with, you know, with fouls in general, what is too much contact? What is, you know, allowed? Areas of the pitch is an interesting one from an analytics point of view. You know, if a foul is given in the box, I bet they give less fouls in the box that would be given elsewhere on the pitch because of where it is. And I guess, is the sort of the is the game state a part of refereeing decisions? I bet that's an interesting one to look at, like how many fouls are sort of given in the latter stages when a team are, you know, 1-0 down or whatever. I bet that changes across the board. It's just to find any level of consistency within refereeing, because it's such a multifaceted, you know, all over the place game in lots of ways, isn't it? It's very hard to sort of say what is a foul and what is not. And I guess that's why refereeing decisions are so hard.
True. And we're getting into the analytics now. I'm glad that you brought it up. We've been speaking about a referee and not actually got into any analytics. And I won't go into any data just yet, although I do have some. But I do think that's a really good point about game state, about the location of the foul. And I also think the time of the foul. So there's the whole thing that they say anywhere else on the pitch and that would be a foul. You know, they say that quite commonly in sort of punditry. But it's also a thing which, again, I think people have said, where you can almost, you've got a little bit of a longer rope to maybe have a bit of a cheeky foul in the first few minutes than it would be maybe just after half time or whatever it is. That, as you say, if you're going to try and have that consistency and try and have that objectivity of what is a foul and what isn't, then why is it different depending on at what point the game is? Why is it that you know, the first 15 minutes might be different from the 60th to the 75th minute in terms of, you know, the crowd building, as you say, the game state, the score line, and as you say as well, the location of the foul. So there's so many parts to it. But on the note of like using data and analytics, I mean, credit where credit's due. I've seen a few different things, I think whether it's on Sky Sports or different maybe things on YouTube, I've seen that the referee kind of assessment, have you seen much about it? They do really scrutinize and have like post-match reports among the, I think, is it the PGMOL? So I'm just looking at it now, the Professional Game Match Officials Board, of basically, they have a real database, I suppose. They have they pin a number to the rating of the referee, and that informs then who will play or who will officiate the next game. And they do try and have a bit of, you know, objectivity to it. And let's have it right as well, the referees, from the ones that I've seen, are absolutely mortified if ever they make a mistake. They're not looking to try and do it. So they speak about like how they're always looking to improve their rating and how much they are kind of mortified if their rating ever goes down, and how they compare between each other's, you know, each other's scores and look out for other referees to see how they're doing and stuff. So almost like a player, you're kind of watching to get techniques from other people. So
What contributes to being a good ref, though, is in like, is it, do they almost go, how many decisions have you got wrong? But then again, what classifies as getting it wrong? Like, do you know what I mean? What goes into that rating?
I don't know, but I think this is where they have all of the match officials, and they is it Mike Riley oversees it all in terms of the Premier League?
Yeah, you always hear his name. He's always under pressure because of how bad the reffing is.
Well, exactly. But again, they do have a sort of evaluation of every single referee in every single game, at least at the very highest level in the Premier League, and they assess it accordingly.
I've got this image in my head of them all sat round together, like sort of showing off about their stats, like top trump cards, sort of like, yep, that's right. Most yellows given in the 21-22 season. Yeah, how many did you get, Michael Oliver? Oh, mate, gave out 22, didn't I? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, but like, they do. They have that, maybe not like how many yellows, but they do honestly have an assessment where they try and make it as objective as they can for the officials. But you make a good point, Ryan, because I have found a website called footstats.co.uk and we have some referee analysis. Now we're into the crux of the episode.
Some real refalytics.
I know. Some real refalytics. You've been waiting however many minutes to say that. and here we are. So basically, I don't have any numbers from or on this site. I don't think it has updated numbers from this season, but we can look back at last season. And see, it basically has how many yellows per game, reds per game, and fouls per game. So make of it what you will, because it's an interesting one. Is it that they are legitimate yellow cards? And a lot of these referees are thinking, like, bloody hell, I'm having to officiate. I'm earning my money here in terms of having to actually give these yellow cards. Or are they just, you know, card happy? I don't know. But it also has how many games the referees have actually officiated on as well. And I suppose in terms of the most successful or well-known referees in the Premier League, the ones who referee the most are going to be the ones who have got these higher ratings that we speak about. So
I sense this is going down the road of a per 90 rating for certain referees.
It absolutely is. The highest... Yeah, who basically, do you have a guess? As I can't believe, some people don't even know the names of referees, because I wouldn't know the names of like half the referees in the Premier League, for example. But you know the main names.
That's a good quiz, actually. That's a good quiz. Later on, let's just see how many refs you can get in quick fire succession. Who do I think has the most yellows per 90?
No. Who officiated the most games last season?
I would say it's probably Michael Oliver.
No, actually.
Anthony Taylor?
Well, he's right up there, yeah. Anthony Taylor with 28, Paul Tierney with 27, Martin Atkinson,
he's another one.
Martin Atkinson, 26, Mike Dean, I was going to say sadly no longer with us, sadly no longer officiating in the Premier League, very much alive and well.
Gone on to better things.
Michael Oliver, 26, Craig Pawson, 26, John Moss, 25, and then you get down into... low 20s, Stuart Atwell 20, David Coates 20, and then it's into the 10s. So it has the number of games that they've refereed. So they're probably the most well-known in the Premier League, I'd say. And then you can look at yellows per game. So, I mean, the thing is, sample size absolutely comes into this. So the person with the highest yellows per game has only actually officiated 4 games. So I'm discounting that person. When you actually consider anyone above 10, shall we say, David Coote is the most card happy. Trigger happy ref. 4.5 yellow cards per game across the 20 games that he officiated.
Wow.
That is quite a lot. In terms of reds per game, which I think passes the eye test, well, it certainly does. Michael Oliver has averaged the highest reds per game last season.
Really?
I do think he loves a card.
Yeah, but he's renowned as like one of the best refs, isn't he? Which in my head, dishing out the red cards doesn't necessarily make a good ref, because it makes me feel like they've lost control. But he's sort of got a reputation for being one of our homegrown best, doesn't he, Michael Oliver? Whereas
quite right.
I'm a bit surprised by that. I always thought someone like Anthony Taylor just loves a card, but as if I'm saying that with any knowledge, but it feels like he does.
Well, I mean, with all this as well, because it isn't actually someone impacting the game in terms of like the on-ball side of things. the hypothesis being that Sir Michael Oliver, 0.27 reds per 90. Anthony Taylor, 0.18 reds per 90. But as is mentioned, those two are some of the people who referee the most games, but also, as you say, probably the highest stake games, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So is it that it's, you know, big clashes, there's so much on the line, you're going to get more fouls, you're going to get higher tension, and they are kind of obliged to give a red or two yellows often. So
yeah,
maybe that sort of feeds into it as well, where it's not the referee's fault that they're dishing out the cards, it's that the games that they're officiating, as I say, are having to.
More tasty.
More tasty indeed. Fouls per game. David Coote gives the highest fouls per game. Makes sense because he has the highest yellows per game. Andy Madley, 23.4 fouls per game. So yeah, it's the chicken or the egg, isn't it? Are they giving out more fouls more easily, or are they just refereeing a dirtier game? We don't know.
Well, we know Anthony Taylor's not up there because he just lets people fight in the open and he doesn't do anything about it until he has to, obviously.
True. Just watches on. Well, yeah, I think that was an utterly pointless analysis of referees.
In my head, like, I'm almost like, you know how you hear that sort of police workers get sort of incentivized for how many people they arrest? It almost like, I wonder if referees sort of, is there an incentive for them to give cards or is it an incentive to try and not give as much and look like they're in control? Like I said, I'd love to know which way is deemed as impressive for a referee. I also, did you ever listen to the Peter Crouch pod where they, I think they had Mike Dean on, didn't they? And didn't they talk about the different like factions within the referees? Like some of them were quite pally and some of them didn't get on. Like when Mark Clattenburg was there, I think didn't he like not get on with stuff? And like Andre Mariner was like mates with one of the others and not the others, blah, blah. It's such an interesting world, referees, isn't it, when you actually think about it?
That's what I mean. Yeah, you unpick it and there's far more to it. But I think, did you just start a conspiracy there to basically say that refs are looking for trouble?
I don't know. Maybe. Are they looking to... does it make a good ref? Are you bragging if you didn't give out many fouls last year? Or are you bragging because you gave out loads of fouls? Which one is the one that makes you go, I'm impressive? Or is it somewhere in the middle because you're going, I'm the most balanced referee? I don't know. I'd be interested to know.
I mean, this is a perfect opportunity for the listeners to weigh in with their
any
thoughts.
Any refs out there,
to get in contact with us. Any refs out there, any thoughts, you know where to send them. Okay, so before we move on to our next sort of half and the next topic within refs, I want to give a shout out to friend of the pod, actually, Dr. Mukherjee, who sent something to me. This is going back a few weeks now, and it was a referee analysis, and he basically visualized the referee's sort of decisions, fouls whistled per game, red cards per game, yellow cards per game, penalties given per game, fouls whistled per tackles, I think, which is a good metric actually, into these amazing colourful radars. So we obviously do it a lot. You'll see common visualizations for players at the player level to assess how the style, I suppose, of a certain player. But we have stylistic metrics and visualizations for referees now, Ryan. This is fantastic news.
This is Refalytics. This is what it's all about, right in front of me, looking at these graphs. This is like what I said about those, if you imagine sort of a top Trump character profile for a ref, but much better. So, you know, we can see here the diff. We should obviously put these on socials, but it gives you a proper profile about what the refs like. And I'm a bit like, you know, Mike Dean, for instance, on this radar in front of me, his circle is tiny for all metrics. So it's almost like he's a why bother profile. You know, he doesn't get involved with all that sort of stuff. Whereas Paul Tierney, his circle is absolutely massive for all metrics. So he's clearly buzzing around trying to get involved, giving cards right, left and centre, blowing his whistle all the time. You know, then you've got someone like Craig Pawson, whose red cards shown per game are very low, but fouled whistles per game very high on this graph. So that, what does that say to you? That just says, hasn't got the minerals, basically, to go through with it.
Brilliant. See, this is the sort of analysis that this podcast is all about. The Mike Dean one's interesting, though, because he's sort of notoriously known to make it all about him sort of thing. He's got a bit of an ego. I think that's fair to say. But and as you look at the data, doesn't pass the eye test. He actually keeps quite a low profile. Lets the game flow, maybe. Lets everyone crack on with it. So this
is really good.
Data is good. Let's definitely put this up on social. And yeah, we'll really tag Dr. Mukherjee. So thank you so much for sending that over. And I said I'd give it a shout out. And it's so cool to see. It's very hard to explain over a audio podcast, but we're going to put the visuals up on social because it's great. So couldn't carry on without including that little bit. But I want to move on now, Ryan, to I guess the broader idea. And I think we've spoken about this before about referees obviously influencing the game, but referees being influenced on the game as well, and how obviously the players influence what the referees have to do, but how much the crowd and the stadium and the whole atmosphere influences a referee. Because we spoke about it with certain referees, you know, refereeing, officiating the games that are more higher stake. Is there a difference in their output compared with maybe a bit of a dead rubber game, you know, a quieter crowd or whatever it might be? Timing of the actual kickoff itself, is it that, and I'm making this up just completely off the top of my head now, but is it that a 4 o'clock kickoff is different from a 12 o'clock Saturday afternoon kickoff in terms of what the whole atmosphere is like, and then, you know, as a consequence, what the officiating will be? So much to unpack here, actually, in terms of that bias of a referee.
Yeah, it's all interesting stuff to think about. I mean, the home bias thing. So by that, do you mean, obviously, if there's obviously that famous phrase, isn't there? The so-and-so team, when they're playing at home, have got like the 12th person. Mm-hmm. Is that almost like the home crowd putting pressure on referees when they are officiating a team who's playing at home? And will they give less fouls or less big decisions because of the sort of reaction the crowd gives, etc.? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I suppose it's a two-way sort of answer in terms of it being, first of all, the home advantage is a thing, I guess, in itself, just where the team who's playing at home has got more of their crowd behind them, so it might elevate their performance levels. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that's a whole episode that we've done in the past talking about that, that response of the players and their performance. But as a consequence, they're putting more pressure, the home crowd, more pressure on refereeing decisions. And it's more that it's an unconscious referee bias. And it's quite a well-known thing, quite a well-documented phenomenon within sport in general, that it's, as I say, it's not intentional from the referee, but it occurs nevertheless. And I looked into some research on this, some published papers, to see just how much this was a thing. And there was a paper from 2012 by a researcher called Chris Gumas, looking at home advantage and referee bias in European football. And essentially, okay, granted, this is going back a few years now, but looked at, and he looked across two seasons worth of data in the Champions League and the Europa League, and looked at all of the decisions that were given by the referee, and fouls and cards and things like that. And essentially, he found that within the Champions League, that referees issued 25% more yellow cards. And really? In the Europa League, the referees issued 10% more yellow cards to the away team compared to the home team.
Right.
And basically, came to the conclusion that the higher level of home team bias, especially in the Champions League, appeared to be mainly due to higher crowd density. So there was a correlation, I suppose, a relationship between how packed the stadium is and how dense the stadium is, and then, as a consequence, the referee bias.
Right.
So, yeah, basically the final conclusion within the research paper was that it provides further evidence that crowd support influences referee decisions. So even if we think that it doesn't, it absolutely does.
Well, it must do, mustn't it? I mean, look, if you know that you're going to make a big decision, if a player goes down from the home team and the crowd are absolutely in uproar, you're going to feel a bit of pressure to give that penalty, aren't you, to the home team, if they've been hacked down at the last minute. Even if you're unsure about the decision, that noise and that intimidation surely is going to make you feel like a bit of pressure to say yes, because you know the reaction. That's intimidating for anyone, whoever you are, whatever character you are, which I guess says, you know, I guess you have to be a certain type of character to be a referee, but you know, of course it's going to influence it, surely.
Yeah, exactly. As we said before, they're only human.
Mm.
I think the best way to kind of show that in recent years, which we wouldn't have chosen in normal circumstances, but has been thrust upon us, is the whole pandemic and how we can dissociate between the effect of the crowd or lack of effect of a crowd, you know, or the absence of a crowd, and how that influences the referee's decision. And I saw another research paper on this, and it's called The Sound of Silence in Association Football: Home Advantage and Referee Bias Decrease in Matches Played Without Spectators. And this is by someone called Fabrizio Soares and their colleagues in 2020, obviously looking at COVID-19 pandemic and the effects of referee bias. So said that the aim of the study was to investigate whether home advantage and referee bias still occur, and to what extent, during matches played in the absence of spectators. And it looked at the first and second divisions of the top four countries in UEFA ranked sides. So it's quite a substantial number. We talk about sample size. This was 841 matches behind closed doors. So a fairly healthy size. And basically, I won't go into the specifics of the results and the numbers, but they did find that there was a reduction in home advantage and in a reduction in referee bias. Unconscious or not, there was a reduction in referee bias as a consequence of not having fans in the stadium. So they said that this brings further support to the claim that among all factors contributing to home advantage and referee bias, crowd noise itself does have a relevant role. So spectators can significantly contribute to determine the dynamics and outcomes of football matches, which in itself is such an interesting finding, to know that when you go to a football game, despite thinking that you are just kind of watching on, you can really truly, as a collective, influence the outcome of a game.
If you shout loud
enough, yeah. Which in itself, forget the referee side of it, that in itself is a really interesting finding, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. The funny thing about that always makes me laugh whenever I go to live games is you could be sat in, you know, the highest upper tier in one of the biggest stadiums in the world, and a player goes down, and immediately you shout as if either for your team, basically, and as if you can see it clear as day with no binoculars or anything like that. Some of the chants and some of the shouts are so funny from someone who's very often a neutral. I'm always like, look, if the ref can't see it that close, how did you see? You know, but.
I get frustrated at that. I think I watched something I watched a game on TV recently, and there was a player who was, I think, quite clearly concussed, and the crowd, and they sort of went down initially, then got up, then a few minutes went by, and then they went down again because they were clearly, you know, injured, and it was quite serious. And then when they went down again, the crowd were like up in arms by the fact that they went down again, like, get up. And it's like, this is serious. Like, but obviously, because every fan is so biased towards their own team, they'll just berate any other player or obviously a referee if something doesn't go their way. But it does. It shows that you can have an effect.
Yeah, that is really interesting that it, you know, sort of, you know, tangibly does have an effect on decisions. And, you know, you can understand why, can't you? One thing I'd be interested to get your opinion on before we wrap up. I mean, we have actually got through most of the episode without discussing VAR too much, which pat on the back for us both. I think something that I find interesting is, you know, when with the replays and when the ref goes over to the monitor to look, I think obviously they should do that more often. There's a massive chat all the time, isn't there, about why refs don't do that more often, and it's become a bit of a sort of a caricature, hasn't it, that when a ref goes over, you almost know they're going to change their decision. I can count on probably one finger a time I can remember that a ref has stuck to their decision when they've gone to the monitor. Replays, do you think they should be in slow-mo, or do you think they should be played at real time? I'm not sure where I stand on that question. It's such an interesting one because I totally see both sides of the argument. But you know when they show the slow-mo replays and things look really bad and refs then make their decisions on that, just in terms of different factors that sort of influence refs' decisions, I find that one a really interesting one because I can't put my finger on what I think. Do you have an opinion?
I don't, but I'm happy to share one in real time because I agree with you. I think it's a really tough one. I think given my sort of clumsiness in five-a-side, I think I'd probably be getting a lot of red cards for what is just in real time, just simple clumsiness, like a slightly late challenge, maybe treading on someone's foot, which if you slowed it down, you know, within an inch of its life, it would look far worse. So I do absolutely agree with the idea that when you slow it down to a certain extent, it really does look far more dangerous than it actually is. So I think there's a lot of instances where, yeah, having it in real time will just show truly what exactly what the referee saw, obviously, and what maybe should be given as a decision.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't really know. But on the going to the monitor thing, I don't know whether this is asking you a question back now, or mainly my new idea. Basically, rather than going to the monitor each time and showing everyone that you're doing the whole square, imaginary square thing, like running over to the monitor like in a hurry, then you've got fans all like near you, again, trying to have an impact on the referee's decision. What if the ref just had like an iPad, or not even an iPad, just a phone, where they just sent it straight through to the phone and you could just look, you could still be in the middle of the pitch and just look on your phone and just look at the result there. Do you know what I mean? Rather than
that is a really
around,
interesting idea.
Saving all the time of running to the corner or the side of the pitch, just have it on your phone. Bish, bash,
ref's like, I've got a text from the VAR room.
Got a text. Do you know what I mean though? Just like bish bash bosh, just get it done. Like look at it on your phone. And you could even be like while they're, I don't know, while a player is you know, getting treatment or something for an injury, just quickly like just check on your phone. Not like scroll through your phone, don't go on Twitter or anything, but just check on your phone and just look at the decision and reflect. Do you know what I mean? I think that could
you might be on some here. Vardaphone.
Honestly, I mean absolutely. Absolutely.
Vardaphone, mate. You just introduced Vardaphone to the world.
Vardaphone. I've got to think
about
it. But then
I mean that'd become an act of theatre in itself, though, wouldn't it? Like, so they're running up to the monitor, and I was like, "Oh, what is?" They'd be like, "Oh, he's going to his pocket. He's got his thing." All the like players be looking like over the shoulder, look, trying to see what the thing is. I like the idea; it's quite funny.
No, but like, it does have a serious point to it. I think, like, it maybe you'd need to iron out some creases, but I do genuinely think that it could have some validity. Vardaphone.
Ref at EE.
That was what I was trying to think of. Unbelievable. There's so many. We're gonna have to come back to this.
It is a thing. Yeah.
I mean, if there's any other place to finish, I think it's there. Before Ryan thinks of any more puns, because I know how he operates, I'm going to wrap it up there, Ryan. But yeah, thank you. I enjoyed that episode. That was a fun one. But yeah, thank you for listening, everybody. If you want to get in contact with us, of course, you always know how to do it. You can contact us on email, fanalytics.pod@gmail.com. Or, of course, you can catch us on socials at FanalyticsPod on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you, as ever, for listening. Send in any thoughts, questions, funny puns. Ryan will love to hear that. enjoy the rest of your week, everybody. We will see you next time.
Sports Social Podcast Network.